This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Made him as hard on him as possible. You know, going out there, showing some swag, talking trash, doing all that stuff, because at the end of the day, He's gonna have the leaders there. And I mean, that's kind of how it's going to be. And I said something to him at the end of the practice, like, hey, keep it going. We're going to keep making you better. And, you know, not necessarily saying that you just had a terrible day, but it's like days like this are going to make you better. So, you know, that's our job. And I, like you said, I mean, honestly, just the first 3 days, obviously, we had three practices. He's done a lot of positive things. You know, he's made some really great throws and just coming in with that swag, as you know, obviously as a rookie quarterback, but he doesn't seem flustered by anything. So that's exciting to see.
Steve Rosenbloom, Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's us. We're here Memorial Day. Thank you for giving us part of your Memorial Day. Thank you for listening to us. We're going back to the guest hotline here on The Score, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Joined by Alex Shapiro, Bears beat writer, reporter for NBC Sports Chicago. And Alex, if I have a question. If Kevin Byard's right and the defense is going to make this quarterback better, how come Jay Cutler isn't a Hall of Famer? Wouldn't that defense have made him better? Connect the dots for me, Alex.
That's a good question. First of all, Steve, Mike, thanks for having me. That is a wonderful question. You know, Jay Cutler, and I was not covering the team. I wasn't at practices back in the Jay Cutler days. But watching from afar, he always struck me as a guy who, and maybe this is unfair, who had, you know, great talent, but maybe not that X factor. And I think that that X factor, that it factor, you know, is maybe the missing ingredient, the necessary ingredient. So, you know, by all accounts, Caleb Williams does have that. We'll find out sooner, you know, rather than later, you know, within a few years, whether or not he really does have that X factor. But I think that was probably the missing ingredient, right? Iron sharpening iron only works when both sides have that greatness quality, that intangible that people are always looking for in quarterbacks and football players, et cetera.
Alex, I tend to agree with what you said, and I can tell you as somebody who was there some of the time that you also had the fact that it was pretty much an open, not-so-secret that most of the guys on his team didn't like him. So you had that.
Killed by his own troops in Vietnam.
Literally, you had most of the team that didn't like Cutler, and that came up periodically as well. But that doesn't seem, and I wanted to talk to you about how that kind of relates to Caleb, because it does not, it seems to be the opposite. Caleb seems to have, I don't want to say won over the locker room, but he seems to very quickly acclimating himself with his teammates, both the young guys and some of the older guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there's still going to be a bit of that feeling out process as the summer goes on. You know, when the defense challenges him, they're going to be dialed into how he responds. They want to see how he responds to adversity. So I think, you know, first impressions are all great and first impressions are really important. But I do think that that kind of assimilation process, not necessarily ingratiation process, but, you know, the process of them gelling, coming together as a unit, that's going to be ongoing throughout the summer. But certainly, you know, when guys are getting together, he's not even drafted yet, guys are getting together to throw the ball around in Los Angeles, you know, with Roma Dunze as well, who also hadn't been drafted. I mean, that's a really, really good sign. And certainly in our short interactions with Caleb Williams, you just get the sense that he just gets it. He just understands that, yes, there is this kind of aura around me and there's all of this hype and this media circus around me, but I need to put my head down. I need to do the work, and I need to respect the veteran leadership in the locker room before I take a leadership role myself.
Our guest is Alex Shapiro, Bears beat writer, reporter for NBC Sports Chicago. We're talking Bears here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito with you. He is saying the right things in the right way. He's showing great poise. And the whole idea of why duck it? You know what? We're here. We're expectations. This is why we're playing. Why duck it? And I don't know. We were discussing it earlier. The expectations are far closer to C.J. Stroud than Justin Fields. That kind of year. You can be that guy. You're walking into a better situation than C.J. Stroud had. And even though you have the same problems, the same criticisms of ball security and being at and holding on to it too long, you're still expected to be closer to C.J. Stroud. Is that fair based on the supporting cast, the expectations, where the defense is as well as the offense? Do you think that's fair expectation? He's walking into this and he's welcoming, he's embracing those expectations. Are they fair?
Yeah, I think they are fair to a degree. You know, I think it would be unfair if the expectation was Caleb Williams is going to play lights out, break every rookie record, and lead the Bears, you know, on a Super Bowl run. But, you know, breaking every rookie record is a pretty low bar for the Chicago Bears, and he should do that. If things go well, he should break the rookie quarterback records. You know, I went through it. I don't think the Bears have ever, on purpose, started a rookie quarterback in week one. Kyle Orton did it, but only because Rex Grossman got hurt in the preseason, right? Mm-hmm. The plan was not for Rex Grossman or for Kyle Orton to start week one. This is the first time they're really planning on doing it in the modern draft era, you know, when the NFL and AFL merge. So I think those expectations are fair. The cast of characters around him are incredible. You know, when does a number one overall pick get to play with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and another top 10 pick at wide receiver? And, you know, you talk about the ball security, and yeah, there were times when he put the ball on the ground too much in terms of fumbling the football while he was trying to make plays. And, you know, there was some of that hero ball stuff, but Caleb Williams had to play hero ball at USC to give USC a chance to win. That team was not very good. The defense was atrocious. If he learns that my defense is actually really great and we can play complementary football and I have all these playmakers around me and I don't need to do everything alone, his interception numbers are actually phenomenal. You know, he doesn't turn the ball over via interception in clutch moments very often. He certainly didn't do that in college, and, you know, there's no reason to believe he will do that in the NFL. So when you take all of that kind of into account, yeah, I think it is fair to put high expectations on him. I mean, he's the number one overall draft pick with, again, a great cast of characters and a pretty low bar to clear.
Absolutely, Alex, and we appreciate the insight on Caleb. But you mentioned the defense. I wanted to ask you about that because by design, they didn't do a ton to the defense this offseason, but they did sign Byard, who we heard coming into the segment. I know his past from the Eagles. I know reputationally what he brings from a scouting standpoint or from a film study standpoint. What do you see from Byard at free safety?
Well, the thing that really stands out, just in contrast between Eddie Jackson and Kevin Byard, is improved tackling. This is a guy who is going to mix it up in run defense a little bit more, and then as a backline defender, you know, with deep shots. So the playmaking is there. The ball skills are there. The leadership is there. And then the uptick in tackling, I mean, you could view it as an upgrade over Eddie Jackson. to be honest. And then what was interesting to me about what Kevin Byard also said very recently is that he doesn't necessarily want to just play free safety. Like Eddie Jackson was best as a free safety. Jaquan Brisker was best as a strong safety last year. But he's saying, I can do both. You know, we talked about that tackling. I can go in the box and I can mix it up in the run game. And that could really help the Bears disguise coverages if they do take advantage of that versatility, right? If they let Kevin Byard play in the box a little bit and they let Jaquan Brisker play deep a little bit more than we saw last year. Now you're adding some wrinkles that could confuse opposing quarterbacks. So between that versatility and that uptick in tackling, the Bears could have a really, really good pair between Brisker and Byard.
We're talking with Alex Shapiro. He's a beat writer, reporter for NBC Sports Chicago, covering the Bears. We're talking Bears here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito. Now, the OTAs are voluntary. Coaches who have to answer questions about guys who are not there always maintain, make sure you know it's voluntary. Darnell Wright's not there. Montez Sweat is not there. Somebody else has to rush the passer eventually. What do you make of the no-shows at OTAs? And who's going to rush the passer besides Montez Sweat?
I make absolutely nothing of no-shows at OTAs, especially this early in the year. I believe it was this time last year people were all worried because Jalen Johnson wasn't there. And what did it mean? Was he about to hold up? No, he was just hanging out with his daughter. You know, these people have families. It's, for a lot of them, a time to tie up loose ends before heading into the more physical parts of the off season, the more intensive parts of the off season. It's their chance to get that last vacation in, you know? So I make absolutely nothing of it. And there's no reason to expect any player would be holding out at or upset with anything this off season. It seems like all systems are a go. In terms of who will rush the passer, I mean, you got to look at DeMarcus Walker. And I'm actually a little bit more confident than maybe others in DeMarcus Walker as defensive end number two. I think he's a guy who, along with everybody else on that defense, really benefited from when Montez Sweat showed up. You know, when Montez Sweat showed up, Justin Jones, there was a big uptick in his play to the point where I was like, maybe the Bears just keep Justin Jones to start at DT because he's played pretty well. Obviously, the secondary played so much better. And then I think DeMarcus Walker also, I mean, his production went up. To me, he was much more noticeable when he was getting much less attention. And then his versatility where, you know, the Bears like to move him into defensive tackle on obvious passing downs for their quote-unquote NASCAR package.
Mm-hmm.
So DeMarcus Walker is a guy who I think could surprise some fans with a pretty solid season after, you know, after a slow first half of last year.
Alex, how realistic is expecting jumps from guys moving from either year one or to year two or year two to year three, specifically Dexter, Pickens, Tyreek Stevenson? We've seen good things from all those guys, but what can we expect, you think, in as they gain experience here in the league?
You know, I'm most high on a big jump from Tyreek Stevenson specifically, just because I think playing cornerback in the NFL is so, so hard. And then it's even harder when you're playing cornerback opposite Jalen Jones, because nobody is throwing the ball at Jalen Jones, so you're getting that much more attention. So a year of experience, a year going through it, I think will really, really help him. And that's kind of what we saw with Kyler Gordon last year, right? I mean, Kyler Gordon kind of struggled his rookie season. And then last year when he was healthy, I thought he was phenomenal. You really saw his instincts really take over, where his rookie year is like, okay, maybe you're a step behind the play. It almost looks like he's thinking out there. And then in year two, he's just playing fast or faster. I think we could see something like Tyreek Stevenson, and he certainly showed the ball skills to be super productive in the NFL. It's just when you clean up the other stuff and you can play a little faster, then you can play more consistently. So Tyreek Stevenson, I think, is a guy who could have a big jump. Jervon Dexter, I'm really, really interested because the Bears are putting a lot of faith in him. And I do think he got better as his rookie season went on. But they really are counting on him to take a big step. We're not going to be able to see or assess anything really until the pads come on, you know, later in the summer. But the Bears say his get off the line of scrimmage is better. We'll see. We'll see. I'm more curious about Jervon Dexter and Zach Pickens. You know, I think probably still looking at a rotational role, maybe behind Andrew Billings and Jervon Dexter. We'll see if he plays both nose and three tech. But if I had to circle one guy for a big jump, I'd look at Tyreek Stevenson.
Alex, terrific stuff. We appreciate you taking part of your holiday to join us and talk some Bears here on The Score. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for having me. A pleasure as always.
Alex Shapiro, NBC Sports Chicago, talking Bears. We're going to take a break. Later this hour, we'll open the phones, 312-644-6767. We have texters who compare Grody to Steve Lyons. He fills any time slot, anytime, anywhere for The Score, gives you a good show. Espo is more like Manny Mota.
Oh, hey.
When you need the big hit in a big game, he'd come through.
All right. I'll take that.
Southern texter, 336, Roger in Greensboro. Pedro is in deep. If the rookie catcher is responding like a senator, oh boy. Yeah. And we're finally going to do that. I got this earworm that's just been, it wasn't just running through my head. It was running through the studio. I've been singing, Inagata DeVita, baby. Mm-hmm. So we'll deal with that. And Connor Bedard sucked on an international stage. So we'll talk about that. And Mark Grody will be here. Mark Grody! It's not his show, but it will be his show at
Bears.
11. He'll be here at 11. We'll talk with him. Thank you for spending part of your Memorial Day with us. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know that I'm loving you. In a God of a Vita, baby. Don't you know that I'll always be true? That's Dougie Owen. That's Iron Butterfly, as Bart Simpson.
That's right. Yep.
That's Iron Butterfly in a God of a Vita. So a couple days ago, I read where Doug Ingles died.
Uh-huh.
Co-founder of Iron Butterfly. Co-writer, well, wrote the song. Mm-hmm. And the story of the song is terrific.
I'd love to hear it. I have not heard it up till now.
They were recording their sessions. They were recording it in Hempstead, London, I believe. Or New York. No, Hempstead, New York. So they're recording in New York. And you pay for session time, right? So they all left, except Doug Engel. He's there. And a big jug of Red Mountain wine. So he started drinking and he was making music and he was making sounds and he had it. He hit it and he kept drinking. And they found him there the next day in the studio when they come in. Doug, what's up?
I had a song.
So he has the song and you heard the music,
mm-hmm,
and you heard the lyrics. The lyrics were supposed to be, you know what they were supposed to be, right?
Nope.
In the Garden of Eden. That's what he wrote down, in the Garden of Eden. When he sang it for Iron Butterfly, He slurred his words because he was hungover or still drunk, one of the two, and without sleep. And it was, in a God of David. That's what happened. That was the title.
Way.
Yeah. And so the earworm, as you can attest to people.
Yes.
Was running through the studio during breaks because I couldn't stop.
All morning, folks. Your radio pal Steve has been walking around the studio singing In a Gata Davida. And I think I caught, now normally you're an air guitar man, I think I caught you playing a little air bass guitar in that one with the bass line.
And because it's a lot of metal owes it to In a Gata Davida, Iron Butterfly. And here's what's even better. In making sure I had things right about the story and the way that song came out and Doug Engel's passing, it was recorded today in 1968.
How about that?
56 years ago today. 56, of course, is DiMaggio's hitting streak. DiMaggio, of course, was a teammate of Yogi Berra.
Yes.
And Yogi Berra was a topic previously.
And he was in something with Kevin Bacon. I know it.
Yogi Berra?
No.
Was in something with Kevin Bacon. And here's something else. Because we got to Yogi Berra, we're going to go to Robert from the South Bend area. Robert, welcome to The Score. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, guys. Just remembered that back, I think it was 97, Sammy Hagar did a song, The Yogi's So High, I'm Stoned.
Did he?
I had not heard that one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Yogi's so high, I'm stoned. Well, I don't recall that he did that, but Yogi Bong would make a really good... talk to Lindsay. Lindsay Berra, his granddaughter, who executive produced that. Anyways,
here it is.
Gata Davida.
The Yogi's So High, parentheses, I'm Stoned, song by Sammy Hagar.
That's how he got...
That's from 1977. I never heard
Lawrence,
this song.
That's how Lawrence Peter Berra, by the way, got his name. Because he played... When they played on the Hill, they played Little League, Joe Graziola.
Yep.
And he was clearly the best player in the area. When they held tryouts, he was the best player in the area. They had nothing up on the Hill. And I mean nothing. They had no benches for Little League. You and Brian Pawuk and all that, right? Uh-huh. You got your travel team.
Yeah.
You got, right?
Yes.
Benches, you got to see coaches have limousines.
Swag. They not limousines, no.
They had no. So Yogi sat on the ground, folded his arms, folded his legs, and someone said, "You look like a yogi."
No kidding.
And it's
I had not heard that story either.
Duck. And that's it.
Look at that.
In a Gata Davida, baby.
224 texter says, Rosie, as a bass player myself, it warms my heart to know that you are playing air bass today.
Yeah.
He air guitared the Eagles earlier, but he definitely air bass guitared In a Gata Davida.
You gotta play the song that's there. You gotta play the notes
I'm
that
with
are
you.
There.
I understand. 224,
I'm happy to help you. 630 texture. I'd rather listen to Iron Butterfly's drum solo on a loop than listen to Grafol speak. Oh, yeah. We're right there for you. Stanley. Is this Stanley? Do we have Stanley? Stanley, are you with us?
Well, I prefer Stan, Rosie. How are you, man?
Stanley.
Hi, Stan.
Stanley, don't shy away. He wants to be Stan the man. He wants to be Stan Musial.
He is Stan the man. Yeah, he's Stan from Bellwood. Right. I don't even have to see the phone to know that.
That's right. How are you? Happy.
I'm doing good. Sitting here enjoying the show and hearing you talk about old times, Yogi Berra, and of course my favorite topic, and that's piling on Pedro Grafol. I got two things to tell you about Yogi Berra, then we'll get to Grafol. But of all of Yogi Berra's quotes, my favorite one is, I didn't say half the things I said.
I think that's a book. They compiled it. It was a book. I didn't say that.
I actually heard him say that on that show with, remember the show that Dick Enberg hosted every week? He'd have a panel of one team playing the other.
Sports Challenge. Sports Challenge.
That's right.
Well,
Yogi Berra was there with a panel of obviously ex-Yankee players, and he actually said, "I never said half the things I said, so I can." And also, Rosie, you do know of all of baseball's absurdities. One of them is that Yogi Berra was not a first ballot Hall of Famer, and neither was DiMaggio. I think it took like about two or three ballots for both of them to get in. I don't know what the writers of those days were thinking or what their criteria was for Hall of Famers, but nobody could get in on the first ballot in the 40s and 50s, and Yogi was one of them. I think it took him three ballots, actually. Isn't that ridiculous?
It's crazy. I don't know another way to do this, though, because I thought giving writers have a built-in conflict, and the appearance of conflict is as bad as the conflict itself. That could easily be, he brushed me off for an interview, I didn't get this, now I can hold it against him, I can send it a blank ballot or not vote for him. It's like, really, Yogi Berra, with more MVP, three MVPs, more World Series rings than anybody, more World Series than anybody, period, and he had a World Series home run record, I think.
Sure.
And, okay, he's not a first ballot. And DiMaggio, right?
The some guys are
DiMaggio. Well, this is
automatic, right?
There's a long list of them, of the players that played in the 20s and 30s. Lefty Grove, Carl Hubbell, Mel Ott, Rogers Hornsby, Jimmy Fox, Hank Greenberg. None of them were first ballot Hall of Famers.
It's remarkable. You're a gatekeeper of Cooperstown. You want to be selective, but right, show some common sense.
Those are they don't come any easier than that.
So right?
I don't know.
No, literally.
There's your gimme.
That's what I was going to say. Like, how do you vote? How do you not vote for guys that you know like that are automatic Hall of Famers? Like, how do you vote against? Ken Griffey Jr. is the first example that comes in. How do you not vote for Ken Griffey Jr. to make the Hall of Fame when you know he's a Hall of Famer? And how could he not be a Hall of Famer?
The only two players from that era, the 30s and 40s, that were Ted Williams, Stan Musial, and Bob Feller were the only players of that era after the initial class that were first ballot Hall of Famers. And then after the war, the Jackie Robinsons and Willie Mays and all those guys were actually first ballot, unanimous, but were first ballot Hall of Famers. But the great players of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, I don't get it. I don't know what the criteria was, but you can look it up. I couldn't believe it. I had this conversation once with Barry Rosner, and we were stumped. I don't get it.
I didn't know the list was that long, Stan.
I'm sorry, Stan. I didn't mean to cut you off. Ted Williams, Musial, and Bob Feller were the only stars of that whose heyday was in the 30s and 40s that went in on the Hall of on the first ballot. Yogi Berra and DiMaggio was really, I certainly don't get that. But they started going in on the first ballot from the players from Jackie Robinson on. But I'm telling you, you can look it up. I get Lefty Grove, the war heroes.
Yeah.
I don't get it. But anyway, Pedro Grifol, Rosie, I hate piling on here, and I don't want to, take personal shots or anything like that. I've had it up to here with him. And my question is, why is he still the manager? What's the upside to keeping him? Because I don't see any redeeming managerial qualities. He clearly does not like young players, and he's clueless about how to develop them. He doesn't know how to structure a lineup. The other night, he ran a lineup out there that he actually should have been arrested for, you know, with all of the worst defensive players on the team in the lineup at the same time. Gavin Sheets in right field, Shoemake at shortstop, Maldonado, who's like hitting 050. You know, they're all in the lineup at the same time. You know, I couldn't even watch. I had to turn it off after the first inning. He plays favorites to the detriment of the team. You know, he loves Benintendi and Maldonado. I don't get that. You know, just on the basics, I don't understand why he's the manager of the team, because he doesn't have one redeeming quality. He's bad at everything, and he's not good at anything. And they won't fire him. I don't get it. So you need to help me out with that.
Stan, I'm gonna help you here, my friend. This is to our previous discussion, I think, with Mike Quatty, not to bring the Cubs into a Sox conversation. But I promise you, when the Sox are good or trying to be good, he will not be there. So if that's next year, which I surely hope it is, that the White Sox tried to contend in 2025, that Pedro, after this year, gets let go, they're not going to pay him to not manage, despite
but
being
doing that now.
I know. I know.
Right. But follow the money.
They are far and away, and they are far and away the worst team in baseball. Their ticket sales are way down. All of the other financial stuff has to be a part of the equation. And if they know they're going to stink, why bother getting rid of him right now? That's my thought.
Well, I'm sure that there's truth to that, and I get it, but it still doesn't make sense to me. I don't think that's a good reason to hold on to a manager just because you're paying him and you can't do any better, you know, at that time. I just don't. I understand that, and you're right, but I don't think that's a good reason for him to be managing. I think that they should get rid of him because it's the right thing to do. I mean, we have to watch this team.
No, you don't have to. We watch so you don't have to.
There you go, Stan.
Stan, you're a Hall of Fame caller.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in.
Made my
day.
But that's it. And listen, and diehard fans like Stan, and this is the problem, right? You don't have to watch, but you want to watch. You love baseball. You love your team. This team is making it hard to watch.
Do you remember a couple years ago, I'm going to refer to something my guy Noah Weinstein did. You saw him on television, even if you don't know the name. There was a moment there when everybody knew Tony La Russa was falling asleep in the dugout.
Oh, yeah.
and there was a walk, and you hear this fan getting up again. Pinch runner, Tony. Remember that?
Yes.
Pinch runner,
yep.
Tony. And then pause. And then La Russa sends out a pinch runner.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
That was Noah, yep. Noah Weinstein.
There you go. Good job,
and
Noah.
He was the guy who, and Tony, and I was going to do that. If he wants to think he did that, he did. So I saw my guy Noah a couple of weeks ago, and he remains a White Sox, I don't know, I guess observer, however you want to. And he and his wife, too, so it's family misery. They can go to family therapy about the White Sox. Mm-hmm. He had the best line now because he said, oh, you know what? Paper bags are so passe. You can't do that. He said, here's what you do. You take your eclipse glasses and take them to the ball game, because if there's no eclipse, you really can't see anything. It just blacks it out. So we watch Sox games with our eclipse glasses on. Noah, that's genius.
I had not.
Sox fans, we're here to help. We're givers, not takers. We're going to give up the airwaves for a moment, and then we'll come back, and I don't know what we're going to do. Oh, I did want to flesh out a little bit. Connor Bedard sucking on the world stage? Sure, why not?
Okay.
It's Monday suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I forgot about, yes, Texter, 708 Texter, Sunshine of Your Love, Cream, right there with Inagata DeVito. 847 Texter, But he's doing that now. When you made the point about not paying a guy to not manage. But he's doing that now. Stan is officially the caller of the show, according to the 847 texter. 229, the White Sox are the poster team for Saturday suckage. Yeah, boy, they have been. So, speaking of suckage, Connor Bedard, you know him, right?
Blackhawks.
Savior. He doesn't just walk on water, he skates on ice. Right?
Yep.
So he got hurt this year, still scored 22 goals, 61 points. Unleashed a shot that was spectacular in a lot of ways. And went to play in the world and came back. Probably won the Calder Trophy, Rookie of the Year. Went to the Worlds, play for Canada. And started off great. Beating up on Great Britain and like, oh, this is it. This is a guy. And by the end of the tournament, where Canada didn't medal, or didn't, certainly to win the gold. There's only one medal in Canada, and it's gold. And if it's gold.
Yeah. You didn't win the medal, though.
There's first place, and then there's misery. Right? Isn't that the idea?
Mm-hmm.
He was the 13th forward when they normally play 12. He was he had gotten so bad, he'd be so off his game. I mean, he's a heady passer, got a great shot. He's like not taking shots. He's not. And the coach is saying, we're playing the guys that give us the best chance to win. Connor Bedard, your Blackhawk savior.
Benched.
Was not giving him. We don't pay much any attention to the World Juniors here.
Nope.
Even when the Blackhawks' next big thing is there. Didn't happen. You're playing against world-class players. I think it's great. Maybe it's good that it didn't happen. It didn't really matter. It wasn't like it was happening. Not like you're having a first-round flame out against Arizona or Vancouver or something like that, right?
That would be worse, yes.
So here you go. That's it. Sorry, didn't do well. But he handled even that failure with ridiculously good aplomb. You saw, I thought, he struck me as a wonderfully poised young man, built for the spotlight, built to execute, and built to explain if it didn't happen.
I'm with you. And I did pull up 22 goals, 39 assists, 61 points for his rookie season in 68 games. He will not turn 19 until July 17th.
Yep.
I know what I did when I was 18, going on 19.
What did you do?
I was not playing professional hockey, I can promise you.
You still aren't. 773 texture, I love you. What a great reference. A great reference. He just texted in second place, stick knives, meaning steak knives, right? We got a new contest this month. First place is a $25,000 Cadillac Eldorado. Second place, I want to see second place. Second place is a set of steak knives. Third place, you're fired.
Yeah.
That was Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
In Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yes.
It was in the movie, but not the play. Do you know why?
No.
They needed to fill out time in the movie. That scene didn't exist in the play.
You're kidding me.
David Mamet had to write something. Like, no, what are we doing here? Well, Alec Baldwin's available. Let's give him the scene. This
great
scene. Owns the movie.
Owns it.
I mean, when you think about who, you had Pacino playing the part that Joe Mantegna created on Broadway. And you had Jack Lemmon.
Jack Lemmon, yep.
And you had Mitch and Murray, I'm going to miss you, Mercy Mission from downtown. Mitch and Murray sent me. And just that scene, always be
close. ABC.
Put the coffee down. Coffee is for closing.
Every damn day in every sales organization known to man.
Right.
ABC.
773 texture, we love you for that. Okay, so we're going to, at the top of the hour, Mark Grody will be here. It'll be his show. But we'll be on that show.
Yes.
Because we're going to be here.
But it's not our show.
It's not our show, but we're going to be on that show. What are you doing for Memorial Day, Espo? What are you guys doing?
We have bought some grilling things. Meats.
Some grilling things.
Meats, buns.
We're burning cow.
Mixes.
We're burning cow and pig. And
no,
cow.
That is the plan. We are going to do the traditional and some yard work might get mixed in there. You never know. We'll see what.
Doesn't this sound like fun.
See what the multi-hued one has in store for me when I get home. So
and so the multi-hued one, which hue is Stacy's hair?
We
now?
Are in a brownish, blondish kind of more of the natural hair color. Well,
They're not the same. One of these things is not like the other ones. Which one's natural?
Well, brown is natural. It's got some blonde streaks in there.
So we've seen all measure of the multi-hued.
We were purple and blue and Lord knows what else during the beginnings of COVID. We had every color under the sun in there.
She wasn't alone in the purple thing. I know. There's still some turquoise walking around this earth.
Yes.
Tyler, you. Hey, Memorial Day. What?
I got nothing. Nothing else planned after today. Just a relaxing day at home and that's it.
Are you going to stick around and help Alex Kuhn produce Grody or are you not? Are you done after this excitement?
If he wants me to, I'll stick around, but...
Well, Alex, we have high expectations for Alex Kuhn and Grody, so that's definitely something we need to keep our eye on. But I think if there's a man up to it, I think Alex is there for you.
Alex is always up to any challenge.
Yes, he is.
847 texter, hey, Steve, I love when Stan calls into any show. He is so smart and so funny. Can you get him his own show? Well, we are his own show. That's it. I don't know that Stan wants to work that hard.
I actually said this to Steve off the air. As a longtime listener, I mean, before I started working here, when I moved back to Chicago after college, I started listening to The Score when The Score was in its infancy. And Stan is literally probably the first caller I remember. Like, the guy was... He was one of the best callers that we had 30 years ago, right?
He just called into Boers and McNeil and Boers, the to heavy
talk
fuel
baseball
crew,
with Terry.
And Boers and Boers, just to talk right. baseball with Terry.
Yes.
And it just happened to radio and commercials got in the way of their discussion.
It was so good. And so just hearing his voice, it's one of those triggers. It's like, hey, it's Stan from Bellwood. I remember that from 30 years ago.
Stanley Hall of Fame.
Love
it. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Mark Grody. Mark Grody will be here. He will be here because he's supposed to.
And it's his show.
Bear Claw. Everybody
Bear Claw. Bear.
And maybe by then, because Grody's here and Mitch likes him, he's like the house, he's Mitch's house pet. Maybe then Mitch will have brought in Bear Claws from Dunkin' Donuts for us. Bear Claws.
Bears.
Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. The Score.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
I forgot about, yes, Texter, 708 Texter, Sunshine of Your Love, Cream, right there with Inagata DeVito. 847 Texter, but he's doing that now, when you made the point about not paying a guy to not manage, but he's doing that now. Stan is officially the caller of the show, according to the 847 Texter. 229, the White Sox are the poster team for Saturday suckage. Yeah, boy, they have been. So, speaking of suckage, Connor Bedard, you know him, right?
Blackhawks.
Savior. He doesn't just walk on water, he skates on ice. Right?
Yep.
So, he got hurt this year, still scored 22 goals, 61 points. Unleashed a shot that was spectacular in a lot of ways. And went to play in the world and came back, probably win the Calder Trophy, Rookie of the Year. Went to the Worlds, play for Canada, and started off great, beating up on Great Britain and like, oh, this is it. This is a guy. And by the end of the tournament, where Canada didn't medal, or didn't, certainly to win the gold. There's only one medal in Canada, and it's gold. And if it's gold,
yeah. You didn't win the medal. Then.
There's first place, and then there's misery. Right? Isn't that the idea?
Mm-hmm.
He was the 13th forward when they normally play 12. He was he had gotten so bad, he'd be so off his game. I mean, he's a heady passer, got a great shot. He's like not taking shots. He's not. And the coach is saying, we're playing the guys that give us the best chance to win. Connor Bedard, your Blackhawk savior,
benched.
Was not giving him. We don't pay much any attention to the World Juniors here.
Nope.
Even when the Blackhawks' next big thing is there. Didn't happen. You're playing against world-class players. I think it's great. Maybe it's good that it didn't happen. It didn't really matter. It wasn't like it was happening. Not like you're having a first-round flame-out against Arizona or Vancouver or something like that. Right?
That would be worse, yes.
So here you go. That's it. Sorry, didn't do well. But he handled even that failure with ridiculously good aplomb. You saw, I thought, he struck me as a wonderfully poised young man, built for the spotlight, built to execute, and built to explain if it didn't happen.
I'm with you. And I did pull up 22 goals, 39 assists, 61 points for his rookie season in 68 games. He will not turn 19 until July 17th.
Yep.
I know what I did when I was 18 going
what?
On 19.
What did you do?
I was not playing professional hockey.
Oh,
I can promise you.
You still aren't. 773 texture, I love you. What a great reference. A great reference. He just texted in second place, stick knives, meaning steak knives, uh-huh. Right? We had a new contest this month. First place is a $25,000 Cadillac Eldorado. Second place, want to see second place? Second place is a set of steak knives. Third place, you're fired.
Yeah.
That was Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
In Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yes.
It was in the movie, but not the play. Do you know why?
No.
They needed to fill out time in the movie. That scene didn't exist in the play.
You're kidding me.
David Mamet had to write something. Like, no, what are we doing way. Here? Well, Alec Baldwin's available. Let's give him the scene. This the
great
scene.
Great scene.
Owns the movie.
Owns it.
I mean, when you think about who, you had Pacino playing the part that Joe Mantegna created on Broadway. And you had Jack Lemmon.
Jack Lemmon, yep.
And you had Mitch and Murray, I'm in a mission, Mercy mission from downtown. Mitch and Murray sent me. And just that scene, always be
close. ABC.
Put the coffee down. Coffee it's used is for closing.
Every damn day in every sales organization known to man.
Right.
ABC.
773 texture, we love you for that. Okay, so we're going to, at the top of the hour, Mark Grody will be here. It'll be his show. But we'll be on that show.
Yes.
Because we're going to be here.
But it's not our show.
It's not our show, but we're going to be on that show. What are you doing for Memorial Day, Espo? What are you guys doing?
We have bought some grilling things. Meats.
Some grilling things.
Meats, buns.
We're burning cow.
Mixes.
We're burning cow and pig. And
no,
cow.
That is the plan. We are going to do the traditional and... some yard work might get mixed in there. You never know. We'll see what.
Boy, doesn't this sound like
we'll
fun.
See what the multi-hued one has in store for me when I get home. So
and so the multi-hued one, which hue is Stacy's hair?
We
now?
Are in a brownish, blondish kind of more of the natural hair color. Well,
they're not the same. One of these things is not like the other one. Which one's natural?
It's brown is natural, so oh. It's got some blonde streaks in there.
So we've seen all measure of the.
Hey,
we were
purple and blue and Lord knows what else during the beginnings of COVID. We had every color under the sun in there.
She wasn't
so.
Alone in the purple
no,
thing.
I know.
There's still some turquoise walking around this earth.
Yes.
Tyler, you. Hey, Memorial Day. What?
I got nothing. Nothing else planned after today. Just a relaxing day at home and that's it.
Are you going to stick around and help Alex Kuhn produce Grody or are you not? Are you done after this excitement?
If he wants me to, I'll stick around, but...
Well, Alex, we have high expectations for Alex Kuhn and Grody, so that's definitely something we need to keep our eye on. But I think if there's a man up to it, I think Alex is there for you.
Alex is always up to any challenge.
Yes, he is.
847 texter. Hey, Steve, I love when Stan calls into any show. He is so smart and so funny. Can you get him his own show? Well, we are his own show. That's it. I don't know that Stan wants to work that hard.
I actually said this to Steve off the air as a... Long time listener. I mean, before I started working here, when I moved back to Chicago after college, I started listening to The Score when The Score was in its infancy. And Stan is literally probably the first caller I remember. Like the guy was, he was one of the best callers that we had 30 years ago, right?
He just called into Boers and McNeil and Boers, the
to
heavy
talk
fuel crew,
baseball with
and
Terry.
Boers and Boers, just to talk right. baseball with Terry.
Yes.
And it just happened to radio and commercials got in the way of their discussion.
It was so good. And so just hearing his voice, it's like, it's one of those triggers. It's like, hey, it's Stan from Bellwood. I remember that from 30 years ago.
Stanley Hall of Fame. Of
love
course.
It.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Mark Grody. Mark Grody will be here. He will be here because... He's supposed to.
And it's his show.
Bear Claw. Everybody
Bear Claw.
And maybe by then, because Grody's here and Mitch likes him, he's like the house, he's Mitch's house pet. Maybe then Mitch will have brought in Bear Claws from Dunkin' Donuts for us. Bear Claws.
Bears.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.